Good morning. Today's daf from Baba Basra's Kuf Yud Tes. We are in Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. We're starting today with Amalei Rav Papa Labaye. Rav Papa says the following to Abaye. This is a succession of questions that Rav Papa asks Abaye as it relates to the topic of discussion that we've been talking now for the past couple weeks. So let's just quickly get our feet planted on the ground. The Mishnah tells us that Benotzavchad got not one, not two, but three portions of Eretz Yisrael, three chalakim. The Mishnah tells us that the reason why is because that their grandfather, Hefer, was Yotze Mitzrayim, is one of the people who left Mitzrayim, therefore entitles them to a chelek, and their father, Tzavchad, is the Bechor, he gets Pishnayim, he gets two times. So that's one portion plus another two portions, that totals three portions. So that is the three portions that are given to Bnei Tzavchad. This prompted the Gemara to bring us to a very fundamental debate regarding who gets a chelek in Eretz Yisrael? And there are really not two, but three options in the Braisa. This takes us back to Kuf Yud Zayin. The Braisa on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph brings down the first, the opinion of Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yoshia says, Yotze Mitzrayim. So if you got a ticket to Eretz Yisrael, if you left Egypt. So upon leaving Egypt, so now you have a nachla, you have a chelek. And that obviously now with that chelek, that will go to your children, your grandchildren, etc., etc. So you have to be Yotze Mitzrayim. Our Mishnah certainly seems to follow the position of Rav Yoshia, and that was a comment made immediately in the beginning of the Gemara. Meaning that if you're going to set up our Gemara, our Mishnah, seems to be that the author of our Mishnah is Rav Yoshia. The second opinion of the Gemara of the Braisa is Rav Yonasan. And Rav Yonasan says, Bai Haaretz, you go into Eretz Yisrael, meaning 40 years later, upon entrance into Eretz Yisrael, so that gives you a chelek, that gives you a portion. Although, as we already discussed, and we will continue to discuss, it's slightly complicated. In that, it's not that you just go into Eretz Yisrael and you get a chelek, but rather here's what happens. When you go into Eretz Yisrael, you get a chelek, you get a portion. And then what's going to happen is that's not how it's going to be divided or allocated, but rather all the portions are then going to get bounced back to the ancestors who left Mitzrayim. So for example, let's just deal with our topic at hand. So for example, the Bnei Tzavchad who go into Eretz Yisrael, so they're going to get a portion. They're going to get, again, three portions, and we'll discuss later this morning, maybe even four portions. So they're going to get a portion, and then that is going to bounce back to their grandfather, Hefer, who was Yotze Mitzrayim. Then what Hefer is going to do with all the portions that he receives, all the various portions that he receives, is that he's then going to send it forward to the Marishim, send it forward to those who are going to stand to inherit him. And it could very well be, based on the system, that even though you received a certain number of chalakim when going into Eretz Yisrael, but that's not the actual number that you received. I'll use the example that we said back then, back when we discussed this for the first time. Let's say you have Reuven and Shimon going into, let's say you have Reuven and Shimon who left Mitzrayim. Reuven and Shimon, not the principal Reuven and Shimon. I'm just using names as examples. So Reuven and Shimon who left Mitzrayim. Reuven had 10 sons. Shimon had one son. They now, the sons go into Eretz Yisrael. So they are going to be receiving 11 portions. In other words, Reuven's 10 sons are going to each receive a portion, and Shimon's one son is going to receive one portion. Those 11 portions now are going to go back to Reuven and Shimon. Reuven and Shimon now are the collective estate of that, of those 11 portions, being that they're two brothers, and again, let's just assume right now that neither is a Bechor, so then they're going to split it 50-50, so that's 5.5 each, and that 5.5 now is going to be sent back to the kids. So the 10-son family is going to be receiving 5.5 portions, and the 1-son family is going to be receiving 5.5 portions. That is the more complex nature of the Chalukah according to Rabbi Yonasan. And then there was a third opinion in the Braisa, and that was Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Shimon ben Elazar says yes and yes, meaning for Yotze Mitzrayim you get a chelik, and for Hachnasos Eretz Yisrael by Haaretz you're also going to get a chelik as well. Could be talking about one person, although that's unlikely, as we already discussed. Most probably it just simply means that if you are of the generation who left Mitzrayim, you're going to get a chelik. And if you're also, not you the same person, but if you're going into Eretz Yisrael, you're also going to get a chelik. That's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. With all that stated, so we then started the Gemara yesterday, which started on the bottom of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, And that is a debate between, not a debate, but a discussion, a dialogue between Abaye and Rava, meaning based on a number of psukim, arguments, brisos, it certainly seems that one position carries more weight than the other position in terms of who gets Eretz Yisrael. Should it be Yotzei Mitzrayim or should it be Bai Haaretz? So, like, for example, as we pointed out yesterday, makes much more sense. This is one of the examples that we had yesterday. It makes much more sense to say that it's Yosef Mitzrayim. Why? Because consider, B'nai Safchan are screaming, meaning they're turning to Moshe Rabbeinu and they're saying, "Hey, we're not going to get a portion." Now, what does that mean? It means, again, at the surface level, it means that the portions were already given out, and what they were claiming was, what their complaint was, is that, our father didn't have any sons, he only had daughters, he died in the Midbar, and what's going to happen to our portion that was already allocated? Certainly, that certainly favors the idea of Yotzei Mitzrayim, it does not favor the idea of Bai Haaretz. Alright, and then what we did over the course of yesterday, and we're going to continue to do today, is we're going to defend both positions. Meaning, even though Yotzei Mitzrayim certainly seems to work out a little bit better, but Gemara defends the other position as well. Okay, all that stated, so now we are still in this discussion between Rapap and Abaye, Amale Rapap and Abaye. So this is where we're up to now in the Gemara, Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, and Bishlam Lamanda Amale Yotzei Mitzrayim Nischal Ka'ar. So again, it's certainly the simple pshat in the psukim seem to favor the position of Rabbi Yoshio. Right? Certainly seems to favor the position of Rav Yoshia that the land is going to be given out to the Yotzei Mitzrayim, to those who left Egypt. Why? Based on the following. So, Hainu Dichsiv, because we have the following pasuk in Yoshua. Now, as we already went through the 17th parak yesterday of Yoshua, we're going to do it again today, and that is in the 17th parak of Sefer Yoshua. So, what you have are a description of the B'nai Menashe. The B'nai Menashe, who, as we already discussed yesterday, so they had a complaint. And their complaint was, there are too many of us. There are too many of us and not enough land. So if you remember, Yoshua gave an answer to them yesterday, which to them was unsatisfying. And that is, okay, go into the woods, go into the forest. You know, go find some more land. Yesterday, the Gemara understood this maybe not on the most literal sense, but maybe on a Musar standpoint. Okay, but anyway, we are quoting from the same parak in Sefer Yoshua, and the pasuk reads, "Vayiplu chevle Menashe asara." So, how many portions did Menashe get? Menashe got 10 portions. Now, that number 10 is a very funny number, and we're going to break it down right now as follows. Shisa de Shisa Batiavas, this is the Gemara now commenting, obviously, it's Aramaic. So the Gemara is now commenting on how you break up the number to the number, how it breaks down to the number 10. So Shisa de Shisa Batiavas, because when you look at Menashe, so the children of Menashe come out to 6 sons, meaning Menashe himself had 6 sons. The Rashbam on the bottom of the Amud goes to the names of the 6 sons, obviously one of them being Chefer. Okay, so the son of Menashe, Menashe had 6 sons, that's 6 Bati Avos. And then Arba Didu, and then as far as B'nai Safchar are concerned, they got 4 portions. So the number 10 is really composite of the 6 Bati Avos of Menashe and the 4 portions that went to B'nai Safchar. Now, the Gemara later on, in just a little bit, is going to ask a very simple question. Why are we constructing a number made up of those two points? They're far apart from one another, right? The Bati Avos is the original ancestral genealogy. Genealogy, thank you. Rocks and people. The genealogy of Sheva Menashe. And then we're putting it alongside the B'nai Safchar. It's unusual that we're doing it that way. Okay. And the Gemara in just a little bit is going to ask that question. But in the meantime, for our purposes right now, the magic number is 10. And again, if you take 6 away for the Bati Avos, the magic number is really 4. So now 4. B'nai Safchar got 4 portions. How did they get 4 portions? I'm sorry. The Arba Didu, Asara. El Laman, Dam Labai Aretz. Now, if you say that Eretz Yisrael was apportioned not to the people who left Egypt, but rather to the people going to Eretz Yisrael, so how many are B'nai Safchar getting? They're getting 2. Meaning, so it's 6 Bati Avos, and then it's 2 that are going to B'nai Safchar. Tamanya hu, Dahavu. Shisa de Shisa Bati Avos, Vetrei Didu, Hatamya. So it comes out to not 10, but rather 8. Now, at this point in time, the Gemara is a little bit difficult to understand for the following reason. Meaning, how do we get to the number four? How do we get to the number two? The number two is actually easier to arrive at. Okay, let me spell out the number two. Everything I'm saying right now is the Rashbam and the Bam and the Amud. I'm just going to be doing it outside. I'm not going to be doing it inside. But everything that's coming out of my mouth, hopefully, is the Rashbam. The number two is easy to arrive at because, again, let's consider. By Haaretz, when you go into Eretz Yisrael, so you get a ticket. But again, what happens with that chelik that you get is that you don't receive that chelik, but rather you kick it back up, and then it goes back to you. So now, as far as Benos Lafchad are concerned, so it gets kicked back up. It gets kicked back up to Chafer. Now Chafer is going to Chafer is one. It was the Yotzei Mitzrayim. He left Egypt, and now Chafer is going to give it to all of his sons. For our purposes right now, let's say that Chafer had eight sons. I know I'm throwing out a number, but the Rashbam uses that number. So let's say Chafer had eight sons. Of those eight sons that he had, okay, how many of them died in the desert? You looked ahead. So how many of them died in the desert? So right now, let's even say we don't know. For our purposes right now, it doesn't matter. Meaning, as far as Bnei Slavchad are concerned, who do they represent? They represent Slavchad, obviously. Slavchad is a Bechor. So how much does a Bechor get? The Bechor gets two. So how much should Bnei Slavchad get? They should get two. Very good. So in other words, from the standpoint of Bai Haaretz, the number two is actually quite understandable. All the Chalakim go back up to Chafer. Chafer then gives it back down. And because they are the sons of Slavchad, because Slavchad's a Bechor, they get two. That works out wonderfully. How did the Gemara previously get to the number four? You know, four is a very difficult number to arrive at. Now, we already learned our mission together. What did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah said three. Okay, three is fine. Meaning, again, the Yotzei Mitzrayim is going to each get a chalak. So that means Chafer is going to get a chalak, and Slavchad is going to get two Chalakim. So that's three. How did you get to the number four? So the Gemara asks exactly that question right now. So the Gemara says, if we're going to go with Yotzei Mitzrayim, the number should be nine, meaning a makeup of six and three. So not six and four. So the Gemara says, so what we're going to have to now incorporate in this number is the following. There must be a brother who didn't make it into Eretz Yisrael. So there was a brother who didn't make it into Eretz Yisrael. So that means now, and we have to also add, not only a brother didn't make it into Eretz Yisrael, but a brother of Slavchad who didn't have any children himself. So what is the sequence of Yerusha? For a brother who does not have a child. So now, the father would inherit it. But if there's no father, then the brothers are inheriting it. So that means now that Slavchad is going to be inheriting the chalik of his brother. Now, admittedly, there are other brothers as well. So this chalik that's going to be inherited by Slavchad is going to be, right, only going to be a fraction of the brother's chalik. But at least there is a chalik of what to talk about. So now what the Gemara is arguing is that, so you see over here that putting together the one chalik of Chafer, the two chalakim of Slavchad, and the one, and admittedly smaller chalik of a brother, of a deceased brother, so that's how we got to number four. Gemara says, look, once we're introducing brothers into this discussion, then we could define the other position as well. So even if you hold that it's Bai Haaretz, where we said Bai Haaretz means that they're only going to get two portions, not four, no, it can actually come out to four, because it'll be two portions, as I explained a little bit earlier. And then, what we can argue is that there wasn't one brother who died in the desert, but there were actually two brothers who died in the desert. So that means, as the Rashbam points out over here, of Chafer's children, if we're taking this position, that means now that there's going to be a total of three of Chafer's sons who died in the desert and didn't make it into Eretz Yisrael. One, of course, being Slavchad, and then, as we're conjecturing right now, two other brothers. The two other brothers left with no children. D'tanya. And now the Gemara is just simply going to quote a Braisa, and the Braisa over here is going to record how this conjecture that there were brothers of Slavchad who died in the desert actually supported by Tanaim, meaning there are Tanaim who actually see this in the pasuk itself. So we go through the Braisa, D'tanya, Nason, Titein Lahem, Zenach Lazavim. So you're going to give to them, this is again Moshe's instructions about what to do with the portion of Eretz Yisrael that's going to the Benos Slavchad. So Nason, Titein Lahem, Zenach. So give it to them. So that's talking about their father's portion. And as far as the grandfather's portion, give that to them as well. And you're also going to give them the portion of their father. What do you mean? We already gave the portion of the father. A second portion of the father. Why? Because dad was a bechor. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amar, Af chelak achayavim not lo. And according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov of this brisa, there was also another portion that was going to go to them as well, and that is their uncle, the father's brother, Shenemar Nason Titain. The double language Nason Titain means you'll give and you'll give. Well, what's the additional give? The additional give is the uncle, the brother of Slavchad. Ulaman damer treyachid abba havaluhu. Now, if you are now subscribing to the viewpoint that it wasn't just one brother, but it was rather two brothers, and again, we only got to that because we needed the numbers to work, and we know that the number was four portions. And again, if you subscribe to Bai Ha'aretz, so they only get two, so there must be another two. So now we have to conjecture that there were two brothers who died in the desert. So the Gemara says, fine. Ha'hu me'achuzas nachala nafka. So again, encrypt in the pasuk of achuzas nachala, that refers to another portion that they're receiving. Okay, Adkan. So basically now, after all said and done, that takes us to the end of the discussion in the Gemara regarding Machlokas. Again, it's not Machlokas, but a discussion between Rav Papa and Abaye regarding, of the two positions that we saw, Rav Yoshi and Rav Yonasan, which one of them seems clearer? Which one of them is more defendable in the Pesukim? So if we did just a quick recap, I'm not going to do it right now, but it basically seems that we favor Yotzei Mitzrayim much more over by Haaretz, right? If Hedy were here right now, he'd ask me who the Halacha falls like, and I would say to him, this is history. So, but it is interesting, though, because the Gemara is spending a lot of time with it. So, and generally speaking, the Gemara's comment is my dahava hava. You know, whatever took place, that's historical. Meaning it's interesting, but it's not halach lamaisa. So I can ask myself the question, why is the Gemara spending so much time with this? Okay, it's a reasonable question. I don't have a good answer. Amale Rapapala Abaye Krai Maka Chashiv. The Gemara now asked a question which I foreshadowed a couple minutes ago, which is that number 10 is a strange number. It's a composite of the ancestral genealogy of Menashe. You know, there were six sons to Menashe, so from the standpoint of genealogy, so Menashe branches out to six. And then what are we going to add to that? Well, we're going to add also the portions that are given to Melech Slavchad. What? Like that's a strange composite. So the Gemara is bothered by exactly by this question. So Amalei Rav Papa Abaye Kramai Kachashiv Itzvalim Kachashiv Tuvahavu. Look, if we're talking about the kids, meaning don't just stop at the Benot Slavchad, there are tons of children at this point in time in the genealogy tree of Menashe. So why do we just go with the four of Bnei Slavchad? And Ibat the Avos Kachashiv Shisava. Now, if we're talking about the original breakdown of Sheva Menashe and his children, so the number should be six. It's a very simple and hard number of six. So La'olam Bate Avos Kachashiv. So the Gemara says, really, what the pasuk in Yoshua was trying to communicate to us was that there were six main branches of Menashe. Why then introduce us to the additional four of Bnei Slavchad? Because there are really basic halachas that are learned out. So the Gemara says, because here's what the Pasuk in Yeshua was teaching us. One, is that Bnei Slavchad got a double portion. That accounts for two of the four. And on top of that, the double portion that they're receiving from their father, even though the father never made it to Eretz Yisrael. So we asked the question a couple days ago. We're going to ask the question again now. We're going to ask the question again in just a moment. And that is, wait a second, we know the halacha is that the pishnayim, the double portion that's given to the bechor, is only for current holdings. It does not include future receivables. So they didn't go into Eretz Yisrael yet. Why should the Benot Slavchad be receiving the double portion of Eretz Yisrael when they didn't go into Eretz Yisrael yet? So the Gemara says that's another important halacha, and that's what the Pasuk and Sefer Yeshua wanted to communicate to us, that they are going to be receiving the double portion because Eretz Yisrael, even before entering into Eretz Yisrael, is considered muchzak, it's considered a holding. Okay. We are now heading back to a point that we made in yesterday's daf, and that was, and also two days ago as well, and that is the portion that is going to the children of the Meraglim and the children of the Mislonanim. Now we said that, at least according to one opinion we saw yesterday, all that's going to go to Kalev and Yoshua. Okay, but according to another opinion, it's not going to go to Calvin Yeshua, but rather it's just simply forfeited. Now, if it's forfeited, so what about their children? So here now, the Gemara picks it up with a point that we made yesterday, and that is that their children are going to be receiving land from Avi Avihim and Avi Mosehim. So they'll get it from their grandfather. Meaning either a maternal or paternal grandfather. Now, just let's remind each other. With a maternal grandfather, so they'll be receiving their maternal grandfather's chelek, but of course only if the maternal grandfather had no boys. Meaning if their maternal grandfather only had girls, so the girls are going to get it, and they, being children of the girls, are going to be receiving that as well. Either way. In other words, the Brisa said yesterday that they don't necessarily lose a chelek. They'll just simply have to jump over the parents' generation and get from the grandparents. Now the Gemara says, V'atayim b'schos atzman. And now the Gemara says that now there's another Brisa. And that other Brisa says that they get schos atzman. They get based on their own merit, meaning the children of the Mislonanim, of the Meraglim, they get based on their own merit. So the Gemara says, Lokasha akamandam aliyotim, Mitzrayim akamandam alabaya aris. Gemara says it's very simple. Actually, to explain the difference between these two brisas, it's just basically going to be contingent on what is the determining factor of how you get a chelek. If you subscribe to the position of Yotzei Mitzrayim, so then we're good. So then that means that we're good, meaning we understand the first brisa. So that means now that already chalakim were given out to anyone who left Egypt, and now as far as the Meraglim are concerned, they forfeited that chelek, and as far as the children of the Meraglim are concerned, they're going to be receiving it from a grandparent, if one exists. As far as the second brace is concerned, they get on their own merit. That's because they subscribe to the viewpoint of by Haaretz. It's simply contingent on going into Eretz Yisrael. And obviously the children are going into Eretz Yisrael. E by Yisema, ha v'ha l'baya Haaretz v'lo kasha, ha d'hava ben esrim, ha d'lo hava ben esrim. Or the Gemara gives another possible resolution. And that is that it's both brisas are subscribing to the viewpoint of entrance into the land of Eretz Yisrael, and the distinction is when they're 20 and when they're not 20. Exactly what does that mean? So let's just take a look at the beginning of the Rashbam. Rashbam over here writes extensively on this possible on this suggested answer of the Gemara. The Rashbam writes, "Lo hava b'nei asrim kishaba la'aretz." We're talking about the grandsons of the Mislonanim. That what happened was is that their parents died. Those are the sons of the Mislonanim. B'nei Mislonanim mamash b'midbar v'hem nisharu tefalim. So, and as a result of that, they were extraordinarily young. So they can't take on their own accord, on their own merit, because, again, as we've said already a number of times, you have to not only enter into the land of Eretz Yisrael, but on top of that, you also have to be 20 years of age. Now, as far as getting on account of being children of their parents, so they're not going to receive because they came from Egypt. Because their parents didn't actually leave Egypt. So in terms of what will give them any kind of claim to Eretz Yisrael, so it's going to have to be not their parents, not their grandparents, but rather the great-grandparents. Dahainu avos ha-meraglim. We're talking about now the parents of the meraglim, shiatzim in Mitzrayim, and we're going to assume that they left Egypt. Now the Rashbam says, now what basically what we're doing is we're setting up the Braisa like Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Now remember, Rav Shimon ben Elazar took the third option. The third option is both. So now, in this constructed scenario, we're going to follow the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Elazar, de'esle tarte, nimtzu Elu b'nei b'neihem yurshin osam kivno slavchad shiyarshu b'nechseh chefer zikeinam. Just like b'no slavchad were basically able to get the land of their grandfather, so too over here with this group. V'afagav dechashiv ketfalam da'ama delein yirush Bechnisas Avim, Shehu Mitzvah Mitzrayim Lo Be'inam B'nei Chaf Bechnisas Am La'aretz V'chazara Leik Lamemar Da'ar Rabbi Shimon Elazar Leisei Chazara. Remember, we are within the position of Rabbi Shimon Ben Elazar. He doesn't have the rebound effect, meaning for him it's just simply a function of either or. Either your grandparents, or in this case great grandparents, are Yotzei Mitzrayim, or you go into Eretz Yisrael. Okay, in other words, then, we know he doesn't have the rebound effect, because remember, the rebound effect is only because we had to deal with both psukim. According to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, you don't have to deal with both psukim. Each psukim in of itself is teaching us a different point. Okay, and the Rashbam goes on, but we'll pause over here. So basically, that is another way to explain the Braisa. That in the scenario in which you have these kids coming into Eretz Yisrael who are below 20, so they could get the land based on the fact that their great-grandfather was Yotzei Mitzrayim. For those kids who were above 20, well, they're going to get the land simply because they entered into Eretz Yisrael and they were above 20. And again, all this is assuming the position of Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Okay. Back to the Gemara on Kuf Yud Tesamad Aleph, where the two dots, V'shaya b'chur noto shnei chalakim v'amai, Rayuhu v'ena b'chur noto b'raikim b'mochsak. The Gemara over here asks a question. It's very strange, because we know the answer to the question, and not only do we know the answer to the question, the Gemara already gave us the answer to the question on the very top of this Amud. So why the Gemara now is entertaining as if we didn't know the answer, it's a little bit strange, admittedly. But, okay, the Gemara here is reviewing the question. How can the Benot Safcha get the Pishtaim of their father, considering the fact that the father died in the Midbar, he didn't enter into Eretz Yisrael, it is a future, it's not a current holding? That's the Gemara's question. Again, we all know the answer, but the Gemara right now is raising it as a question. I'm Rav Yehuda Amashmuel B'Yistos O'Alim. So the Gemara first gives an attempted answer, which obviously is not the answer, not the one we know. And that is, well, the Gemara says, you know what they inherited? They inherited the pegs of the tents of their father. Meaning, what the Gemara right now is currently suggesting is, oh, you're right, we're not talking about the land of Eretz Yisrael, we're talking about actually movable property that was left over by the father. Or in this case, the grandfather. The Gemara says, "Meisiv Rabba, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Ben Osafcha, Nadlu Dala Chalakim Shenemar, Vayiplu Chavlei Menashe Asara." The Gemara immediately rejects this answer because, again, we all know this already. The Gemara immediately rejects the answer because we know we're talking about property. The pasuk in Yoshua, which we already dealt with in the bottom of the previous Amud, tells us that we're talking about property. So we're not talking about movables. We're clearly talking about property, and specifically property in Eretz Yisrael. So again, we ask the question, how can they get the Pishnayim if they didn't enter into Eretz Yisrael as of yet? So Alama Rabba Eretz Yisrael Muchzakasi. So the Gemara gives the answer, which again, now second time in today's daf, Gemara is giving this answer, because Eretz Yisrael is considered a holding even before we went into Eretz Yisrael. It was muftach, it was promised to us, and therefore it's not just you're going to get it, but we have it. Meisvei Amar Rabbi Chitka Shimon Hashikmuni Hayalo Chaver Mitamid Rabbi Kiva. So Rabbi Chitka tells us that Shimon Hashikmuni was one of the colleagues of the students of Rabbi Akiva. The Kachaya Rabbi Shimon Hashikmuni Omer. And this is what he would say. Yodea ya Moshe Rabbeinu Shimon Safcha Yoresh Hashem. Now, remember the dialogue that took place in the Chumash. We went over it already a number of times. So in Parshas Pinchas, in Perek of Zion, so the Benot Safcha go over to Moshe and they say, hey, our father died in the desert. He had a portion, actually had a double portion. Actually, there's also a grandfather as well, who also has a portion. Anyway, and what are we supposed to do? So Moshe listens, and Moshe says, oh, you know what? That's a good question. I'm going to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As if he didn't know. Not the first time in Chumash where he didn't know a halacha. There are clearly four, arguably even a fifth time in the Torah where Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know the halacha. Okay, Pesach Sheni, Mekoshesh Eitzim, and the Mekala. Okay, fine. So four very clear. A fifth one, you can argue. It's not super clear, but the but Rashi brings it down. Machasisa shekel. Right. I know what you're making reference to. Meaning he showed it to him. No, but I'm talking about where someone asked him a question and he said I don't know. And the other one is Pinchas by Cosby. So, right, what am I supposed to do? And Moshe said, I don't know. But again, that's not befirish in the pasuk. Anyway, four times clearly in the Torah where Moshe's response is, oh, I don't know. That's a good question. So what now, Shimon HaShikmuni, a colleague of the students of Rabbi Kiva, saying is, Moshe knew. I mean, it can't be. Can't be that Moshe didn't know. Meaning, basically, what are we going over? We're going over the halacha that a child inherits the father. Now, even though they're daughters, but again, we know, and it's funny, I mean, we know as if, like, we have any any more, you know, we have any more access to knowledge than Moshe Rabbeinu did. But anyway, the Gemara says we know that Moshe knew this. The only thing that was outstanding for Moshe that was unclear to Moshe is the chelik b'chora. That was the only part where Moshe needed clarification on, basically because of what we just went over. Because Moshe also knew the halacha of the pishnaim does not include ra'i; it only includes mochzak. And now it's just a question of, is Eretz Yisrael considered a current holding, or is it considered a future account receivable? That was the only question that was not clear to Moshe. That's what he need to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, as far as this point of clarification, so the truth of the matter is that it could have just simply been written down by Moshe Rabbeinu, meaning like the rest of the Torah, meaning that's the way the information is disseminated. It's just simply written down as, here's the halacha, here's the halacha, here's the halacha. Ella shezach b'no safcha v'nichtav al yadan. But b'no safcha v'zoche, meaning as we were going to be discussing the end of today's shiur, the beginning of tomorrow's shiur, meaning they were very special and unique people. And as a result of that, because of the schuyos that they provided, so they get a parsha, so to say, dedicated to them, because of their schuyos. So, so that is why it seemingly, the way the Torah presents it, is as if Moshe didn't know, but this student of Rabbi Kiva says, but he really did know. Again, one detail he was unclear about, but he basically knew about it. And the whole reason why this parsha was disseminated in this manner is just simply because it's a schus to the Benot Safchad. Additionally, now, as far as the Mekoshesh is concerned, once again, really there was no surprise to Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, what do we know? There was a Mekoshesh Eitzim, he gathered wood. Well, exactly what he did wrong, the Gemara Shabbos has a discussion exactly what he did. But he was Mechal Shabbos. That we could say for sure. And now it's just a question of, he's Mechal Shabbos, b'mezid, intentionally. And Moshe Rabbeinu presumably didn't know what to do with him. And once again, he says, oh, I don't know what to do. And he asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu told him. And once again, this student is convinced Moshe, it can't be that Moshe didn't know.
If he were b'mezid, that means that they actually would have warned him.
Yeah.
And they would have told him what his penalty would be.
Very good. Very good. Very good. I saw in the Masifta he raises that issue. I'm going to be honest with you, I don't remember how we responded to that, but in other words, it's a very valid question. The question is that in order to receive a capital punishment, you need a warning. Including the warning, you need you have to cite the pasuk, and you have to also tell them what the penalty is going to be. So it could be that everybody knew it was a death penalty, and it could just simply be they didn't know which death penalty it was, and it could be that that's enough of a warning. That's a lot of coulds in one sentence. But the fine, it's a really good point. So shemekoshes b'misa shenema mechalam os yimas. The Torah says that if you violate Shabbos, you put to death. In other words, we know deliberate intentional violation of Shabbos has with it a capital punishment. That Moshe knew. Avalaya yodeh be'ezu misa hu yamos. And he just simply didn't know which death penalty it was. And the truth of the matter is, again, as most information is given over to us in the Chumash, it could just simply be a simple dissemination of, hey, if you violate Shabbos, you're put to death, and this is how you're put to death, and oh, parenthetically, it's Skila. So all this could have been done as the rest of the Torah is communicated to us, Ella, Shinizchayv, Mekoshesh v'nichtav ayado, but rather because of the actions of the Mekoshesh, so it was written through the narrative of the Mikoshesh. Lo lamdecha shemagaglin zechus ayde zakai v'chov ayde chaya. And again, this is now going to be the foil, the contrast to the previous point. The Benos Lavchad were special and had zechuyos, and therefore they had a halacha given to us with narration through them. Same thing is true with the Mekoshesh Eitzim, meaning because he was chayiv, because he violated the Shabbos intentionally, so therefore, to his detriment, now he has notoriety for associating the halachas of Hilcha Shabbos, and specifically the punishment of violation of Shabbos, and it's going to be associated with him. There is, clearly, what do we put side by side together? We put the Benos Lavchad and the Mekoshesh Eitzim. There is an opinion in the Gemara in Shabbos that the Mekoshesh Eitzim was none other than Slavchad, so the father. So it's, you know, by no coincidence, certainly in this Brisa, that the Brisa is putting these two side by side. Now, later, tomorrow, actually, we're going to go over a medrash that tells us that even though the Mekoshesh was Mechal Shabbos, he actually had noble intention. We'll talk about that tomorrow. And certainly with the Gemara that we just learned together does not sound like that at all. The Gemara that we just learned together certainly seems to indicate that it was not noble, but he was chayev. Okay. Now we're now on the very top of Kuf Yud Tesamud Beis Eretz Yisrael Muchzakes Ma'akem Estafkalei. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Remember what we just got done saying? We said it twice on Amud Aleph, and that is that Eretz Yisrael is considered Muchzakes, is considered a holding, a current holding. So now Moshe Rabbeinu, what didn't you know? You didn't know that Benos. You knew that Benos Safra were going to get Yerusha. Fine. You didn't know that Eretz Yisrael was Muchzak. Well, what do you mean? Meaning, if that is a given, so then what was Moshe Rabbeinu confused about? That's the Gemara's question. He gufa kamistafka le dichsiv nasati osalachem morasha ani Hashem Yerusha ilachem avosechem odima shemarishem ve'ena yorshem. So what Moshe Rabbeinu was unclear about was exactly how this Yerusha was going to work. Meaning, the word Morasha means that it was inherited or it's going to be inherited when we get there. That's exactly what was subject to the debate or to the suffix of Moshe Rabbeinu. So, Upashle Tarvayu, Yerusha Lechem Avosechem, Omarishem, Ve'enam Yorshem. So the Gemara says, and that's exactly what he was poshet. So, it was a Yerusha from our forefathers, Marisha Meina Yorshim, meaning that the forefathers gave us the Yerusha, even though we haven't actually entered into Eretz Yisrael yet. Vahainu Dichsiv, the Vahainu Dichsiv, Tivi Eima Visita and Bahar Nachlaska. So Tivi Einu Lo Namar Ella Tivi Eimo. So the pasuk grammatically would seem to indicate that Tivi Eimo, not that they inherited it, but they will bequeath it over to their children. As they're going through Kriyas Yamsuf, so in other words, what are they thinking at that point in time? Well, they're thinking that we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael, and we're going to get Eretz Yisrael. So, unbeknownst to them, however, no, they're not making it to Eretz Yisrael, meaning it's Nevuah. Even though they didn't know at the time that they were saying over Nevuah, but Tivi Eimo was telling us that they, through prophetic vision, remember the Gemara elsewhere says that the Shivcha Shebiyam saw more than Yechezkel ben Buzi saw. So, in other words, they had at least temporarily a very powerful prophetic vision, and through the prophecy they knew, or not that they knew, but they sensed that they themselves weren't going to go to Eretz Yisrael, but rather it was going to go to the children. Okay. Next, okay, in terms of the question that was posed to Moshe Rabbeinu, the sequence in the Pesukim seem a little bit strange. The Benos Lavchad stand in front of, now let's go over the order. First Moshe, then Elazar Cohen, then the Nesim, and then Kol Ha'idah. It's a funny sequence. Efshar amdu lifnei Moshe v'chulei, lo amr lehem davar v'amdu lifnei nesim v'chulei eda. So the Gemara says, so what exactly, how'd that work? First they went to Moshe Rabbeinu, do we get inherit the land, yes or no? Do we get the Pishnaim of our father, yes or no? And Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't know, it's a good question, I don't know. And then they then go to Lazar, and then they go to the Nisim, then they go to the Jewish people. If Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to know the answer, I mean, right? That's pretty much where it ends. So the Gemara says, El Asiris Amikra V'Darshehu, Divrei Rabbi Yoshia. So Rabbi Yoshia says that even though the pasuk presents itself in the order that we just went over, but Sarsehu. What we're going to have to do is basically roll it around, flip it around. Maybe you can argue that because of the status of Moshe Rabbeinu, he was listed first. But in terms of sequence, in terms of chronology, it is exactly the opposite. You know, the Benot Safra were asking around. They didn't know. Then they asked the Nesiim. They didn't know. Then they asked Elazar. He didn't know. Right? In other words, that's it. But basically what we're going to have to do is reverse the Pesukim. Abba Chanan Amar Mishum Rabbi Lazar Bebeis HaMedrash HaYoshim. Rather, according to another opinion, we're going to paint the scene as follows. The question was posed to all of them concurrently. And V'halchav Amdom Lefnei Kulan. So, and they asked everyone together. Now, B'maika Miflagi, Mar Sever Cholkin Kavalatame B'makom Arav, or Mar Sever Ein Cholkin. So the Gemara says, well, over here, what's that issue? Meaning, we have basically two different pictures that we painted in terms of how sequentially the question was asked from the Benot Slavchad to all these people. The first way we presented it is it was sequential and separate. And first it was they asked the people, then they asked the Nesiim, then they asked the Lazar Kohen, and then they asked Moshe Rabbeinu. And the second way we painted the picture is that everyone was collectively in the same base medrash together, and they asked everyone together, collectively. And the Gemara says what is really at the core issue over here is whether or not you can give honor to the student in front of the Rebbe. One opinion says he can, the other opinion says he cannot. Well, if you can't give any kind of cover to the student in front of the Rebbe, it's a lack of cover to the Rebbe to turn to the student right in front of the Rebbe and say, hey, what do you think? My Rebbe's right there. So are you allowed to do that? So the Gemara says this is subject to a debate, and that could very well be an explanation of the two different pictures that we just painted. V'hilchasa, the Gemara over here says, Cholkin, V'hilchasa ein Cholkin. So are you allowed to extend kavod to the student in front of the Rebbe? So the Gemara says yes, and then the Gemara says no. And then the Gemara says, now obviously, this is a binary issue. Can't be both. Can't be yes and no. So kashi hilchasa, that's obviously difficult. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, no, it's not so difficult. Why? How de paligle rabbe yikara? How de lo paligle rabbe yikara? So the Gemara says, no. Well, basically, what we'll say is as follows. Look, we have to look at the nature of the relationship between the Rebbe and his own student. Meaning, if the Rebbe himself is showing honor to his student in front of others, so clearly the Rebbe is mochel on his own kavod, and clearly reflects a certain amount of kavod that he himself extends to his own student. If they have such a relationship, so then you can ask a question to the student in front of the Rebbe, because clearly the Rebbe's fine with it. If, however, you never see the Rebbe giving any kind of kavod to a student in front of others, so then you know that the Rebbe's makpid, and therefore you shouldn't ask the student questions right directly in front of the Rebbe. And the Gemara says, and that is the yes and no. Meaning, it's not binary. It's not just absolute. It's not absolute. Sometimes you are allowed to give cover to the Talmud in front of the Rebbe. Sometimes you're not. It depends on how the Rebbe himself behaves towards the Talmud. Okay, let's just quickly recap today, and tomorrow we'll pick it up from the Tana. More with Benos Safcha. So again, I know. It's a Gemara spends a lot of time on this. So the discussion that we continued today was the discussion of whether or not the Yotzei Mitzrayim or the Bai Haaretz are the ones who are Yorish Eretz, who get a Chelek in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara continued from the discussion of yesterday between Abai and Rav Papa in terms of where do the Pesukim stand on this matter? Who do the Pesukim seem to favor? most of the time it seems to favor Yotzei Mitzrayim. The Gemara went into a discussion regarding the children of the Meraglim, the children of the Meslonim, how are they going to be receiving portions of Eretz Yisrael? So Bryce is giving competing viewpoints. And again, the Gemara says it could just simply be reflective of the general machlokas that we've been discussing about whether it's Yotzei Mitzrayim or Bayi Haaretz. And then a really interesting good discussion in the Gemara today regarding what Moshe knew and what Moshe did not know. Because presumably he didn't know about the Yerusha Sabbat. He didn't know about the death penalty for Chil Shabbos, and at least according to one opinion in the Gemara, a colleague of the students of Rabbi Akiva, of course Moshe Rabbeinu knew, it was just certain particular details that he didn't know, but of course he knew the basic halacha in both of these circumstances. It was just a particular detail that he didn't know. And then the last thing we dealt with today was just simply the sequence of when the Benot Safchad were asking not only Moshe but also Elazar HaKohen and the Nesiim and the Zekanim. So what was the sequence, what was the order in which they asked? Did they ask them one after another? Did they ask them all collectively? And that in fact has a halachic ramification of whether or not you can ask a question to a student in the presence of his Rebbe, and the answer is sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends on the relationship.